For Eric, Brittany, and Brian. The road to hell is paved with good intentions, and there is no better illustration of this than is to be found in the dealings of the American government and people with the Indians. The Black Hills will send forth their treasures in gold, and the Sioux will scarcely be missed in the march of progress and wealth. But the Anglo-Saxon were a wiser and a better man if he cared a little more for other races and a little less for himself. Edwin Curley, Curley's Guide to the Black Hills. Indians might inhabit the Black Hills for centuries, and there would be only the change that nature wrought. But in 3 short years, the white men have so destroyed its natural attractions that neither Indians nor game would now choose it as an abiding place. The hills are denuded, the gulches dug and washed out, and all for the sake of gold that is said to be only lucre, and filthy at that. Special Correspondent, Green Bay Advocate, May 1, 1879. I have fallen in love with American names, the sharp names that never get fat, the snakeskin titles of mining claims, the plumed war bonnet of Medicine Hat, Tucson and Deadwood, and Lost Mule Flat. Stephen Vincent Benet, American Names. Prologue. It was high noon, August 2, 1876. James Butler Hickok struggled through the fly-infested slop that passed for Main Street, Deadwood. The name suited the place, an illegal mining settlement perched in the Black Hills, land sacred to the Lakota Nation. Hard eyes stared at Hickok. From cabins and shacks, false front stores and clabbered saloons, the people watched and wondered. There was no mistaking the slim-waisted, broad-shouldered, and sharply dressed six-footer with the flowing auburn hair and large, sandy mustache, or the twin Colt Navy revolvers that he wore, handles forward. His likeness had graced the cover of the nation's most popular magazine. Dime novels trumpeted his character as the epitome of frontier manhood, and his exploits with knife and gun as unrivaled. Miners and merchants, gamblers and prostitutes pondered alike. What was Wild Bill, the legendary gunslinger reputed to have slain 100 or more men, doing here? Did the former marshal intend to upset the lawless comfort of their mining camps? Did he intend to pacify the 3-month-old town the way he had pacified Abilene, Kansas, in blood? Hardly. All Wild Bill Hickok wanted to slay was a bottle of whiskey. Drinking, gambling, and a bit of half-hearted prospecting had become Hickok's routine in the 3 weeks since he had ridden into Deadwood. He camped in deep brush on the edge of town, sleeping in shirt, trousers, and boots. That morning he had awoken late from a makeshift bed in a wagon box. Hickok had tossed back a stiff drink or two before a campfire breakfast with his pard, Colorado Charlie Utter, and 3 or 4 other friends. He'd shaken out his Prince Albert frock coat, emptied his twin Colt Navy revolvers into a cottonwood tree, reloaded and holstered them, finished dressing, donned his trademark black sombrero, and then headed into town. Hickok bore arms only for self-defense. His days of fast draws and provoking gunfights were over, and he knew it. Although he was just 39, Hickok's keen eyesight, an indispensable asset to a gunfighter, was failing him. He wore a dull and listless aspect that his morning brace of whiskey did little to alleviate. Perhaps he might strike gold and grow rich enough to build a home for himself and his wealthy wife. Or the cards might turn in his favor for a change. In any event, pride prevented him from living off his wife's charity. This was the American West, after all. Deadwood was Journey's End. Hickok would make it there, or not at all. After traipsing a few hundred vis